With us, a very special guest. His name is Mr. Ray Payton, and I had the privilege of being on his radio program about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he's a seasoned broadcaster. He's had 22 years' experience in newscasting, anchor spots, radio, television, and, of course, he works at the present with KAYS-TV, a CBS affiliate, public TV, and KCVR. He's hosted radio talk shows, both Christian and secular, as well as doing celebrity interviews on radio in Riverside. And, of course, he's going to be with us here in just a moment or two. He currently has his own programs. He talks on Bible prophecy. And, of course, one of the things he fills in from time to time on John Bennett's program, which is put out by Citizens for Honest Government. Ray, are you there?
How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Well, I appreciate you coming to be with us this evening.
And great to be here.
And we're going to be talking on all sorts of things this evening. Of course, let's get started. Why don't you just tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself? I've told them that you have a long history in radio broadcasting, but just give them a little bit more of your background, and then we'll begin talking about prophecy. We'll begin talking about the crisis, financial crisis in the Far East, and then how so many of these things begin to fit in together.
I do come from a long history in both secular and religious broadcasting, some 22 years. What I found, though, Stan, was that after doing broadcasting for a number of years, 8 years of which was as a radio and television newsman, I began to see a pattern. I started to see studying Bible prophecy back around 1971, of course, when Hal Lindsey had his great first book out, The Late Great Planet Earth, and that got so many of us interested in the subject. And as a newsman, I would see how the events of the day were fitting into that prophetic scenario. You just couldn't say anything about it, though. That was the problem. It's not that we were hiding the news. It's just that we couldn't talk about the real implications behind the news headlines of the day. So on my own, I started keeping track of what was going on, and I'd find 3 or 4 items a month that generally fit into the prophetic scenario. And as I've continued to do that over the years, what I have found is that there are now 5 or 6 specific items on a daily basis that fulfill Bible prophecy, and it has come into an entire ministry that I'm now involved in, where we have a radio program that's on different parts of the country, as well as the internet, and a newsletter, teaching tapes, live speaking engagements, that sort of thing. And so I'm always keeping my eyes out now to see how the day's events are fitting into the prophetic scenario, everything from globalism to politics to the environment, what have you, economics.
Well, now let me just play the devil's advocate here for a minute. And Of course, if we study history, we find that going back to the first century, Christians throughout for the last 2,000 years has felt that this was the end times. Mm-hmm. Certainly the apostles were waiting for Jesus's return shortly after he died, and of course there were many people who thought that the destruction of the temple signify the fact that
right.
That this really was the end times, and life as Jews had known it up until then certainly seemed to end as they were dispersed throughout the world. But we find time and time again within the last 2 centuries those people have said, the Lord is coming again on such and such a date. In fact, as recently as 1988 we had 88 reasons why the Lord will return in 1988. So isn't this sort of a very, very common belief that the Lord is coming soon?
You know, there's a couple of points that you make there, Dr. Stan. And number one is that we are not to set dates, because the Bible does say we won't know the day or the hour. However, if you continue on, it does say that we will know when it's near, even at the door. And for those who are saved, those who are watching for his coming, the Bible promises that it will not sneak up upon you like a thief in the night, that you will know when it is just about to happen. What we can say for those who have said, well, things are continuing on the way they've always been, and even the apostles thought they were living in the last days, that's true. There are some people that subscribe to what's called the six-day theory. They believe that the earth is literally approaching its 6,000th year. And in that scenario, it would have been, based on the verses in the Bible of a day in thy sight is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as a day, it would have been almost 2,000 years since the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ, or 2 days. And so you could say that from the days of Jesus, we've been in the last days, plural. My question is, are we in the final generation? In fact, I have put together, if any of your listeners are interested, a sheet here that I'll be glad to send away if they'll send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. It's called Are We the Final Generation Before the Return of Christ? And it's every prophecy that was forecast from the time Israel returned to the land all the way up until our present day. And it's about 2 pages long. I'd be glad to send that out, and I'll give you the address later on if you'd like.
Well, why don't you go ahead and give that address right now, because we might forget later on.
Sure. It's Ray Peyton, P-E-Y-T-O-N, like Peyton Place. If you're over 40, you know how to spell that.
Right.
And it's P.O. Box 7403, Riverside, California, 92513. Like I say, just put a self-addressed stamped envelope in there, ask for the signs list, and I'll be glad to send that out to you.
And, of course, really, let's just talk a little bit about it, because I think that this really is relatively important. There were certain things that had to come to pass before the Lord would return, and one of them was the return of the Jewish people to the Holy Land. And, of course, 100 years ago when people were writing about end times, there were always those people who said, it can't be now because the Jews have not yet returned to the Holy Land.
Right.
Is that a valid point?
That's a very valid point. In fact, that's the first thing that I mention on the list. You know, Dr. Stan, scripturally, it says that the generation that sees the blossoming of the fig tree will not all pass away until all these things be fulfilled. Well, Israel did return as a nation in 1948 to fulfill God's promise to Abraham. Israel is always referred to as the fig tree, Christ, of course, teaching that Israel's forefathers were the first fruits in his fig tree. So, yes, that was really the beginning of the time clock of the last generation. I was recently at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Washington, D.C., and there was a really interesting event that I had the pleasure of attending, which was the Pray for the Peace of Jerusalem prayer breakfast. There were some great people there, top Christian leaders, Christian congressmen. The ambassador to Israel was there, in addition to a member of the Knesset. And it was, frankly, a little early for my taste, 7 o'clock in the morning, especially on the East Coast. But I went there, and it was fascinating to see the unity that Christians are beginning to have with Israel. It seems almost at a time when our government is beginning to back away, and we're seeing Israel, and more specifically Jerusalem, becoming that burdensome stone and the cup of trembling with the Oslo Accords and the final resolution of the status of Jerusalem coming up here in April of this year. But we went to this breakfast. There was a great ceremony. And then the ambassador of Israel stood up, Dr. Stan. And for those people who have been following Bible prophecy, he brought it to life. He stood up and he said, we've seen the exiles coming back. We have seen, lastly, the Russian exiles coming back, and he said it is time for all Jews from around the world to return to Israel, and he said we will never give up one inch of Jerusalem, and there will be no more peace with the Arabs until we are assured safety. We want peace and safety, which Netanyahu's called for now almost 100 times, and as you know, Dr. Stan, when they say peace and safety, then we know sudden destruction's coming.
And, of course, the Palestinians, and I'm not speaking of all the Palestinians, because many of them are wonderful people, and some of them are actually Christians.
Absolutely.
They're the ones I really feel the sorriest for, because they seem to get hit from all sides. We find the leader, Yasser Arafat, mm-hmm. are really beginning to talk now about going back on the Oslo Accords and organizing now for war against Israel, even though that they've made many concessions and given the right of government to self-government to the Palestinians. Now, they will not really be happy until the Jews have been driven out of the Holy Land.
And the funny thing is, Dr. Stan, they had a chance in 1948 to carve out a land for themselves as the nation of Israel was being born, and at that time they didn't take advantage of it. Now that literally the desert is blossoming again, Israel is one of only 4 nations. I don't know if your listeners know this, but think about this, folks. In 50 years of existence, and this is the year of Jubilee, the 50th year, they are one of only 4 nations on planet Earth to this day who can support themselves and have enough food that they can export it to other countries. Not bad for a little country that's about the size of Riverside County here in Southern California.
Well, I think that there are fascinating, fascinating things transpiring. And, of course, one of the things I've heard, maybe you have some comments on this, one of the Jewish prophecies is that there will be a red heifer.
Yes.
And this will be sacrificed. And apparently they have a red heifer, but it has to be sacrificed in the next year or so. It can only be sacrificed until up it's 3 years of age. What's the story of the red heifer? Because to most of our people who've never heard of this prophecy, they can't understand the significance that suddenly the Jews have now a red heifer that will have to be sacrificed. Does it have to be sacrificed in the temple, or at least on Temple Mount?
There's really a couple of issues there as well, and it is interesting because so much of our Christian faith is based on its Judaic roots, and we are not really taught those in this country. I've had a chance to delve into some of it. I am by no means an expert, but it is fascinating when you realize, folks, that this heifer that was born about a year and a half ago in Israel is the first one in 2,000 years. Now, there are some rabbis who, as recently as November, have said this is indeed, or could be, the red heifer. There were some white hairs, and you know how meticulous Jewish law is. There could be no white hairs. Well, there were some white hairs on the tail as well as on the chest area, but they found that at the root they were red. So a minority of the Jewish rabbis in Israel said in November, we believe this is the red heifer that we will need. Now, for those of you who don't know, folks, what they do with the red heifers is that they would sacrifice them at a certain age. They would mix their ashes in with the water that the priest would use to purify himself before going into the temple at the Holy of Holies once a year. And, of course, it would be sprinkled across the mercy seat as well. And what they needed was a red heifer, which they had not had for 2,000 years, before they could rebuild the temple. Well, in the last few years, Gershon Solomon, who is with the Temple Institute in Israel, has remade 80% of the implements that will be necessary for temple worship. In fact, if you remember, Dr. Stan, back around 1990, when they tried to lay a cornerstone up on the top of the Temple Mount, there was a near riot, and the Palestinians were throwing rocks, rubber bullets were flying, and it was an annual procession which has been ceased since that time. But back to the red heifer, this was the first red heifer born in 2,000 years. Now, about 3 weeks ago, there was an article that came out in the paper that said, this is a dud, this is not the red heifer. Well, folks, even if this is not the red heifer, when you look at everything that's happening in the world prophetically and the fact that they're pushing for a third temple now, the implements are nearly ready, a red heifer has been born for the first time in 2,000 years, and there are Jews who say, even if this isn't the red heifer, we know where the ashes of the last red heifer are buried. There are some who say any red heifer will do. There are some who say we have to have the one that's related to the last temple. It's kind of a complicated answer, Dr. Stan, but it is interesting that a temple can be rebuilt, according to the latest statistics that I've heard, within a one-year period. So if they decide that this is the red heifer, they only need a tabernacle at first, followed later by the rebuilding of the temple, which is allowed by the Antichrist.
But now, of course, they need the Ark.
That's true, and there are all kinds of rumors floating around about the Ark of the Covenant there, folks, too. There are some who say that the Ark of the Covenant is buried beneath the Western Wall, behind a secret chamber that is approximately the size they have found through sensing devices, structure behind the furthest door that is now about the size of the Ark. There are others who say that the Ethiopian Jews, who were the last ones to fly out, actually just before the Russian Jews came back to Israel, that they have been hiding the Ark. As recently as 2 weeks ago, there was an article in the paper saying that the Ethiopian Jews have possession of the Ark. In fact, they just had their major festival there celebrating the Ark. There's also rumors that Chuck Smith, who many of your listeners may be familiar with, is over in Israel now searching for the Ark. So the focus on all of these things happening at the same time, along with many, many other signs, makes you have to look up and say, is it possible? Is this the time?
Well, of course, we can only ask the question. We're not to know what it is, but there seem to be so many things going today as far as the ability electronically to mark people, to have a situation where people will not be able to buy nor sell unless they wear the mark of the beast or be known by the number of his name. And, of course, the first time in all history where we could really move towards a cashless society. This just never could have existed before this time, and yet we see all of these things unfolding today. What are some of the other things that make you think that this might be getting close to the time?
Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Stan, you mentioned an interesting thing there about the mark of the beast. Just down the road from me here in a little town called Norco in Southern California, we have a company called Identipet, which I'm sure your listeners have heard of because they were the first to use the biotechnology that has the grain of rice-sized transponders that are injected under pet skins so that wherever your pet gets lost, you can simply scan over the pet and all of a sudden the whole identification, his address, everything comes up. We now see that beginning to creep into our day-to-day existence. Reports coming out of Japan say that microchips are being melded with human tissue at this point. What would be the reason for that? We can only hypothesize. In New York City this year, in fact, in my most recent newsletter, we talked about how scanning technology is becoming more prevalent at ATMs beginning next year. They're going to be wanting eye scans and hand scans. I have a friend in my Bible study class whose cousin is in the U.S. military in Germany. And as of this year, the dog tags in the Army are becoming computer chips. But his cousin was told 2 years ago that he could take either a regular dog tag or have a chip implanted under his hand. He refused to have the chip implanted, and they said, fine, you can have a dog tag, but if you lose it, you'll have no choice. You will take the chip. Then, of course, there's the mark card, which is being tested on military bases around the world for the United States Army. And this is a card that allows our soldiers to buy using a cashless system at the military bases. It's interesting, though, that of all the names in our language, they chose the acronym MARC.
No, I think it is, too. In fact, we're having a guest here in an evening or two who works for something called Lucent Technology.
Yes.
And I don't know if any of our listeners have seen their trucks driving around town, but what their symbol is a fiery circle. And over about 9 o'clock, you'll notice that there's a little irregularity there than in the circle. In other words, on the inner side, you see a little bit of this circle sort of coming on in. If you know occult symbology, of course, there are many people who exactly at 9 o'clock will show a circle and then, of course, the two ends of the snake devouring its head. Mm-hmm. And this is a symbol which many people think is very closely related to this ancient symbol. It was the symbol of a meeting that they had in Istanbul, the world hunger. And you can actually see that symbol, and it is the snake eating its head. If you read occult books, as I do, you'll find that symbol used over and over again. And now, of all places, it has become the official symbol of Lucent Technology, an offshoot of AT&T. And they have a number of different projects, among which are Inferno, I think Purgatory, and I've forgotten two or three others that have a strong you know, the names that they have chosen for these projects. Limbo, I'm sorry. It was Inferno, Limbo, and perhaps somebody could give me the other two, but each one of these names had an ecclesiastic significance. Why would Lucent Technology take all these names into itself? And, of course, the other side is being so blatant. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm speaking of the Luciferian side, mm-hmm. Because they feel that the people here in America and throughout the world are too dumb to understand the message that's right there. It's just so obvious. It's out in plain sight, and nobody recognizes it.
Isn't that sad, Dr. Stan? I've heard you talk for so long now about this, and others, Tex Mars, he's talked about this,
right,
too. Do you think it's an accident that they're coming up with these names, or is it blatant and we are not picking up on it?
Oh, I think it is very, very blatant. In fact, there's a wonderful book. It's written by Manly Hall, and it goes into the secrets of the ancient wisdom. I think that's the title of it. It's available through his ministry, his occult ministry in Southern California. And he blatantly talks about how this symbology has been here. And he goes back through hundreds of years to show all of the pictures, and the symbology is there, blatant. And, of course, he recognizes it. Occultists like him recognize the Luciferian foundations of this. But the average individual, through all these centuries, has not realized this constant continuity mm-hmm. of evil that has been within our society, and now, of course, is culminating, is becoming the dominant force in our society as Christianity wanes and the occult forces begin to come to the forefront.
It's been very much in the background, and now we have a situation where we have a president who is blatantly immoral, and the people don't seem to care. I'm looking at an article from today's paper. Poll finds public in mood to forgive Clinton. And so there's something right in their face, and they're forgiving. So why not have these symbols? Why not have the plan become more and more obvious? Because they're not picking up on it. And if people like you and I and other concerned citizens come along and say, folks, this was prophesied. Look at what time it is. Just consider it. We're considered wacky. We're nuts.
Well, that's, well, of course, I would hate to be proven right, but I know that we are right. And the signs are there. We are moving towards the climax of history. And certainly after 6,000 years of life here on this planet.
Are you that old, Dr. Smith?
Although I always quote an article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal. I have it filed away. It's an article by David Rockefeller talking about the importance of NAFTA. And he said, you know, we've got to get NAFTA through. We've been waiting for 500 years. 500 years. Well, of course, he's really talking about this long-term plan of evil. But he figures that most people would not recognize what he's really talking about.
Now, that's a quote I had not heard before, Dr. Stan. But, of course, you're familiar with Henry Kissinger's comment about NAFTA being the opening salvo in this global government.
Oh, it sure is. And, of course, the World Trade Organization, we have a full-page ad that comes out of the New York Times, put in by the government of Morocco, talking about the third pillar of the New World Order, United Nations, Bretton Woods, and the WTO, GATT treaty was the third pillar of the New World Order. And actually, it was quoted in a book written by Ed Griffin called The Creature from Jekyll Island, but we actually had that issue of the New York Times, and we used to actually circulate that to people who asked. We had to shrink it down because it was a full size, and Dr. Barry, who had the program just before me, shrunk that down, and so we could actually send it out to people. And here you'd see they were just blatant about it. The GATT WTO was the third pillar. In other words, the third leg upon which this new world government would be created. Everybody throughout the world knows this, except for the American people who've been kept in the dark. And what is really so amazing to me, Ray, is that some of our major so-called Christian ministries attack anybody who talks about the possibility there's a move towards the New World Order, almost as bad as Rush Limbaugh, supposedly the leading conservative on loan to us from God, according to his own admission. And yet he attacks viciously those who talk about the possibility of a coming world government.
I sent some information to Rush Limbaugh years ago. And in fact, I did a teaching tape, and I did an entire article in my newsletter entitled What's Happened to Rush Limbaugh. He promised when he first came on the scene back in 1988 that he would not become one of the elite, that he would always remember where he came from and be one of the common men. I think that started to change, though, back in 1992 when he was sleeping in the Bush White House, when he was sitting in the presidential box during the convention. That tends to change a man, and now he doesn't even have to worry about NFL blackouts. He can fly anywhere in the country he wants, go to any game that he wants, and it's interesting. There is a company, and I don't know if you want me to mention the name of it or not, Dr. Stan, but a very large broadcasting company in this nation. And I think we're about to lose a lot of our freedoms, folks. So much of the information that you hear Dr. Stan, myself, and others talk about is getting out because of talk radio, the great right-wing conspiracy. But there is a group right now, a broadcasting group, that is headed by a friend of Bill Clinton that has bought up so many talk radio stations, it is incredible. In the last 2 to 3 months, they have bought over 1,100 talk radio stations, including the network that has Rush Limbaugh. So while you hear Rush criticizing President Clinton, remember one of Clinton's best friends owns the network now that Rush is on.
Rush will certainly toe the line. I've always thought he was the best conservative that money could buy. Our telephone number out there, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, if you're out there listening and you have some comments or questions about what Ray and I are talking about. But let's get on to some specific issues. How do you see this whole issue, the financial crisis in the Far East, shaping up, and what part does that play in this overall world scenario we've been discussing?
You know, Dr. Stan, I believe that we are in a period now, and again, set dates, okay? But I think we know that it is very near. And again, with all the signs that I've got on this list that I'd be glad to send out to your listeners, I think that it's undeniable. I think we're going to see some dramatic things happening in the next year and a half to 2 years, and I think it's already started in the economic realm. We're sitting here in America thinking, believing the lie from the Clinton administration that our economy is good. The fact is, folks, that if the Federal Reserve hadn't jerked the interest rates up and down some 29 times since 1990, the United States really would have been in a depression. If you remember the recession that happened after the 1988 stock market crash, it actually didn't have its full impact until about 2 years later. Had we not messed around with the interest rates, we really would have been in a depression, because anything under 3% national growth for more than 18 months is a recession, and more than 3 years is a depression. Here in California, we went through 6 years of 1.5, 1.75% growth. We have no gold backing our money anymore. What's happening now is that the IMF, which is the monetary arm of the United Nations and has been controlling a lot of these countries around the world for the globalists, is running out of money to pay off the problems, the bailouts for these Indonesian currencies and these Asian currencies. And what's going to happen is eventually this is going to spread over into this country. It may be shortly after Bill Clinton's out of office. He may never get blamed for it. I don't know. But I think that the tidal wave has started. In fact, I saw a cartoon recently with the Japanese about to be swamped by the economic tidal wave, and they're screaming, "Sell Rockefeller Center, sell Rockefeller Center." But folks, you can be sure that remember, just about 6 to 8 months ago, these were the miracle economies of the world, okay? And we have been shipping through NAFTA, through GATT, through the WTO. We've been shipping so much of our manufacturing over to these countries, particularly China. There's a 50-mile swath of American factories in China now, and we're shipping somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million a day of our money to China just to buy these products to bring into our country. So if you start to see economic problems over there in a world that has become so interdependent economically, it's got to come here at some point, folks. It's been here for years, losing $3 million a year, 3 million jobs a year just to NAFTA. But now I think we're about to see it come here. And I hate to be long-winded, Dr. Stan, but I think this is going to tie us in more and more to the euro, which is rising through the internationalist plans in Europe, and then into a cashless society shortly after the turn of the century.
Well, I think really what's so interesting is that if we look and see what's happening as far as East Asia is concerned, we realize that their value of their currencies has decreased dramatically, so they can sell their products so very, very cheap because mm-hmm. they can build them so very, very much more cheaply than we can. And so those products are going to be flooding into America. On the other hand, with their value of their currency down, they're not going to be able to afford to buy any of our products. So what you're beginning to see now is ships coming from the Far East, laden down with goods and returning back with nothing on board. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing is simply a one-directional trade. And people say, isn't it wonderful that we can buy all those things so cheaply now, and temporarily it's great, but down the line comes the day of reckoning when we no longer are able to be producing here in the United States. Our guest this evening is Roy Payton, and of course you can contact him by writing to him at Post Office Box 7403, Riverside, California, 92513. Is that it?
That's right.
And of course you can ask for a list of the signs of the times, which I'm sure will be fascinating, because so many of the signs that were predicted several thousand years ago seem to be coming to pass today. And of course we've been talking about the crisis and economic crisis in Asia. And of course this is really producing terrible suffering on the parts of the people in these countries, isn't it?
It really is, Dr. Stan. And you know, we are sitting here fat, dumb, and happy. I mean, to the average American, we work so hard, we don't realize how much our money has declined. Of course, all fiat money eventually declines and goes away, and that's what we have. We're not backed by anything. But we still basically have our lifestyle. Even though we're working harder than ever, and we get home, and we're too tired to research these things, so we just get pablum fed to us by the networks for 23 minutes every night, which are owned by the globalists, quite frankly, or at least they're sitting on their boards of directors. And so the folks really don't know. The greatest scheme, I think, that has happened here, Dr. Stan, and I'm sure you would agree, is that Americans think they're free because outwardly nothing has changed. I remember a great poem that came out after World War II where a German was trying to answer the question of why didn't I do anything when I saw the Third Reich rising? And he talked about basically the things we're talking about here, how everything looked the same outward, but inward he knew things weren't the same. And yet he didn't want to speak out for being afraid to be labeled as a weirdo or a disruptor or somebody who wasn't quite right. And I think that's where a lot of Americans are today.
I think it is, too. And I think that we have to recognize that there is a real illness in our land, especially when the polls show the support for Clinton. Now, those polls aren't entirely objective in the fact that they ask, what do you think about the job he's doing, not necessarily about his integrity or other issues, but most people actually think that Bill Clinton somehow is responsible for the fact that we have good times in America. Bill Clinton is no more responsible for the good times we have in America than wet streets are responsible for rain. Bill Clinton just happens to be there. The person who really controls the economy of America is not the American president. Rather, it's Mr. Greenspan. And, of course, he is the Federal Reserve System. The people he represents actually are able to either expand the economy or contract the economy simply by their degree of control over the flow of money and interest rates and reserve rate requirements, etc. And that's what determines whether the economy goes up or the economy goes down. And, of course, you notice everybody always watches and waits to see what's going to happen at the next Federal Reserve meeting. And if they were to start raising interest rates, you'd see the bottom fall out of the stock market and the whole economy would crumble.
And Dr. Stan, wouldn't you agree that we're getting to the point now where we have pulled the strings so often, and I think that when we see these corrections like we saw just a few months ago in the stock market, it is because we are coming to the point where we can no longer fake this, that one day even the Federal Reserve is just going to have to let this thing crash. We're postponing the inevitable, don't you think?
I think so, but I think that right now I wish I was the head of the Federal Reserve Board, because I think he's got some great things. As the economy begins to slow down, all he has to do is begin lowering interest rates. Now, everybody keeps talking about when he raises interest rates, but he can actually lower those interest rates to get the economy moving. Fortunately, I don't think we'll follow the same path that Japan has, where they've got an interest rate of about 0.5%. They can't get anybody to invest or to borrow now because they've been burned so badly. And then, of course, their tax rates are so high. You've got to cut taxes. You've got to give people incentives before they're going to be willing to get in and work. And they've got to be assured that they're going to be able to continue to keep their money. Unfortunately, what we're doing today in Japan, it will cost you more for a Japanese VCR in Japan than it will here in America, because it's all being subsidized and controlled by the government. But they, too, are beginning to get into more and more problems because the large parts of this foreign debt exists in Asia is Japanese money. And, of course, then we have to stand behind the Japanese, because if their system begins to falter, they'll begin pulling all their money out of our United States savings bonds. Yeah. And then what happens? The only way we can attract money is to massively increase interest rates. And at that point, why, of course, our stock market goes into a tailspin. And the average listener out there, Ray, doesn't see how all of these things interlock.
That was my point exactly, right, Dr. Stan, because, you know, that is probably how that tidal wave will come to us. But you have the Japanese and the Chinese that own 80% of our debt. In other words, folks, they're paying us the money that we use every month to pay the interest on our debt to the Federal Reserve. We don't owe that debt to ourselves. We owe that to 13 different banks around the world, only, I believe, 5 of which are owned by American families. And so that is a real debt that we owe. And if we can't pay that, or the Asian countries say, we need to cash in our bonds and our T-bills right now because we need currency here at home, we would have to pay them now. We can't do it, folks, and we're going to end up bouncing. And it's going to be a sad situation.
Well, I think that they're going to be able to hold it off for a little bit longer. How much longer, I really don't know. In fact, I marvel at how they're able to pull the chestnuts out of the fire over and over again. And this latest IMF bailout, and I'm sure a lot of this is with simply created money, that the IMF simply creates bank deposits out of nothing and then pays off debts with it. In fact, one of the greatest swindles of all time is the whole fractional reserve system by which banking creates money out of nothing and then has the audacity to charge people for the money that they, the loan of the money they've created out of nothing.
We didn't think of that ourselves. That's why we're so upset, folks.
And for our listener out there, if you'd like to document that, much of this is covered in Professor Quigley's classic book, A Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, which is available through Radio Liberty. And on pages 324 and pages 325, Professor Quigley will tell you exactly what I've told you. First of all, that the central banks work in concert and with secret meetings to control the governments of the world in a feudalistic manner. And then on page 325, he talks about and actually quotes one of the world's leading bankers who said the American people would be rather shocked and surprised to realize that we create money out of nothing. And, of course, this is one of the greatest secrets of all time, and it's about time we understood how this whole system works.
Dr. Stan, you know what is so scary about this? I believe that when you tie all these things together, and then you look ahead a year or two at this Y2K problem that's coming with our computers. So they said if they put every computer engineer on the problem right now, 24 hours a day, it would take until 2005 to get everything that is run by computers in this country to operate properly beginning January 1st of the year 2000. We are going to see very possibly an economic upheaval caused by that alone. In any case, when you consider that the European Union in the year 2000 is going to have the euro, actually in 1999 is going to have the euro, and they have had influence already on what we've been doing with our 50s and our 100s and soon our 20s and our 10s and our 5s, changing the design, printing new money here that looks like almost the money from the Bank of England, which is from where we got the Council on Foreign Relations and the globalists. When you see that coming and how we are being tied into a seemingly global currency, and then you know that 1 to 2 years after the euro is introduced, that it is going to go cashless. They've already talked about armbands that they're going to be issuing in Europe for a cashless society. I believe that right around the turn of the century, that all of these things, the Asian crisis, and the new money coming in Europe, the unified Europe, and this Y2K problem are going to team together to bring about a global currency which will be swiftly followed by an electronic cashless society.
It may well be. In fact, the euro could become the reserve currency of the world, in which event, why we would find people all throughout the world dumping their dollars. And actually, what most people here in America don't understand is that the major currency in Russia is not the ruble. It's the American dollar, because they've destroyed the value of the ruble, so people collect $50 or $100 bills, and that becomes the basis of their savings, their security. And this is really true all throughout the world. In fact, the people in Asia who had dollars rather than whatever the unit of currency is in Thailand and Malaysia and Indonesia and these Asian countries, those are the people who survived, and the rest are just being wiped out. We've seen the same thing in Mexico. But what happens if people suddenly realize the American dollar really has nothing behind it, is totally a fiat money system? And of course, at that point, we could get into real financial problems here if people begin switching to the euro. And in fact, one of the most interesting things, and maybe you could have heard something about this, Ray, but we're hearing them talking more and more, not only in Europe, but in Asia, about having a common currency with a, of all things, a gold backing for it. What's your take on that?
I think it's interesting, folks, that, you know, frankly, if I had the money, I'd have been investing in gold 10, 12 years ago. Now is the absolute best time to get it, because it is being artificially held down, I believe, so that people can buy it up at bargain basement prices. Because for those of you who are buying into the people who will tell you that gold is not valuable anymore and that the dollar's fine and the stock market's fine, just ask yourself this. We know the next great world power is coming out of Europe. We see it forming before us. We know prophetically that's where it's coming from. And I read just within the last month that Europe is going to be keeping all of their gold. So they know where the power is. And even the Lord said that the silver and gold are mine, saith the Lord. So the only real money is silver and gold. And even if it's being artificially suppressed at this point, the time is going to come where if we're still here, we are going to indeed need that real money, especially on a black market.
And I think it was so interesting. I was reading something the other day that in fact, it was Gary North who was talking about it, as I remember, and he was commenting that the price of gold bars is, I don't know what, whatever the price of gold is now, maybe $290 or
right around $300,
about $300 an ounce. And that's the price for gold bars, but there are none. You can't actually go out and buy them. And so that's the price, but they're unavailable. And of course, so much for supply and demand. Everything is artificially regulated. And you have to understand that all of this has been going on for almost this entire century, to demonetize our currency, to take away the gold and silver backing, and concentrate the wealth in the strong hands, and ultimately impoverish the weak, who are the people who are reliant upon a currency that has no backing whatsoever.
Just a couple of weeks ago, there was a report that one of the world's top investment people had bought 25% of the gold in reserves.
You mean Warren Buffett of Beckett?
Yes, 25% of the world's gold reserves.
Right.
Tell me he doesn't know something's coming. There have also been...
That was the silver, the world's silver.
Silver,
supply,
I'm sorry,
right.
That's what I meant to say. Also, we have had 200, in the last 5 years, 200 U.S. millionaires and billionaires withdraw their money from this country and move overseas. And that was followed, of course, by a huge tax increase in the Clinton administration. Now you may know why. But again, why are they leaving? What do they know that you and I are not being told by the mainstream media?
Well, I really, of course, we can look at it from a purely materialistic point of view, or we can look at it from a spiritual point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And as my wife often points out, we don't find anything about reading Revelations, reading the Bible. We don't find any mention of America, other than perhaps if we are Babylon. Do you think America is the Babylon of Revelations?
I don't believe that America is Babylon. Now, there are some who believe that, you know, Saddam Hussein's rebuilt city over there will be Babylon. Let's face it, he may be rebuilding the literal Babylon, but that's not going to be a world empire. We do know that Iran and Iraq are continuing to become aligned with Russia, which they will for their mid-tribulation attack on Israel. However, there are two different types of Babylon. There is that physical Babylon. There's also the spiritual Babylon.
Right.
Refers to the end time false religion, which some may believe come out of Rome. But I believe that if the United States in some shape or form is still around during that last 7 year period, we could be the economic part through New York, through the globalists, through the international bankers of that Babylonian system, which will be the economic part of the Antichrist system of global government.
And of course, I remember reading the book of Revelations where they talk, you know, alas, Babylon, the merchants of the world wept because, you know, this one center of mercantilism, this one center of trade with which all the merchants traded was no more, alas, Babylon. And of course, it is destroyed, almost totally. And what a terrible thing to contemplate. And yet, this is the biblical prophecy of the things will come to pass. And certainly America has flaunted God. America has turned its back on God. And God will not be flaunted indefinitely and will not be marked indefinitely.
You know, Dr. Stan, I was really holding my breath this last week with the situation in Iraq. And if you notice, we had not only alliances being forged here between Persia and Russia, but we also had Israel's enemies in Russia and China beginning to work together and tell the United States, you better not do this or you could have World War III. We already know that China has the capacity to nuke Los Angeles. We know that China has been arming some of the Middle Eastern countries. Russia has been arming these Middle Eastern countries. And we've been arming the Middle Eastern countries. It was, after all, we who gave Saddam Hussein anthrax in the first place. But Russia made the point of saying just a few days ago, remember, they said that we are not happy with this, and I'm trying to remember the exact quote now that Yeltsin and his minions had said.
Well, he mentioned that we might be setting off World War III.
Right.
And he actually alluded to that.
And the suitcases.
Rather, right.
He mentioned the suitcases again. He said, remember,
right,
there's at least 84 suitcases missing, and we believe they're in the hands of terrorists. Folks, I believe what Dr. Stan's saying, that we are not in prophecy, an end-time prophecy. So you're going to see, very possibly, a nuclear, a biological, or a chemical attack on one or two different cities, and then the United States would be told, stay out of the Middle East situation, which would leave it wide open for this rising juggernaut in Europe to come up. In fact, where has Yasser Arafat been going for the last several months? He's been going to Europe, saying, get more involved in the Middle East peace process. And I'm looking in today's paper that Europe is upgrading relations with the Iranians at this point. So they're getting involved in the Middle East situation.
Let me just comment briefly on that. Then we'll go to Dan, who's waiting on the line here. But Sunday on Dateline, they had something about anthrax. Of course, I've been very interested in the possible threat of anthrax on our society, because no anthrax vaccine is available to any civilian in the United States, and yet the government has announced they're going to immunize or vaccinate the entire military, about 2.5 million people. So the question was asked of this expert on Dateline, well, why are you going to do this? And he said, because of the danger of bacteriological attack, and we feel that we need to immunize our people against the threat of anthrax. So the next question was then, why don't you give it to the civilian population? Oh, he said, well, it might not be effective. They might have some other strain of anthrax, and so we wouldn't want to give it to the general population because it might not work. And, of course, as I'm sitting there, I'm saying, well, if there is no danger to the, why are they giving it? And if there is a danger, why are they not giving it to the American public? There's something wrong with this scenario. And then, of course, having studied population control and the dictates of some of these people in key positions who really would like to kill off 90% of the world's population, and you realize the deadly nature of anthrax, and they're doing everything they can to keep us from protecting ourselves. This indeed is a frightening scenario. Let's go to Dan here on the line. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dr. Stan.
A question or comment?
Yes, sir. By the way, I enjoy your program. I listen over the Internet from Minneapolis area.
From Minneapolis. That's great. I'm glad to know that you're listening up there.
Catch it when I can. I had a question for your guest.
Sure.
And that was, you're talking about gold. What is his opinion of gold, say, bullion or buying into old coins? I guess there's a confiscation question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
regarding, the old coins versus gold or silver bullion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am not an expert on gold, but I do know that there are certain types that are not confiscatable or most likely will not be confiscated. Most people look at the double eagles as one of the best investments that you can get, the $20 gold pieces. I'll tell you, one of the best people that can help you with that, if you're not familiar with him, is Don McIlvaney, who puts out the McIlvaney Intelligence Digest out of Phoenix, Arizona. And he has all kinds of investment things. I'm not trying to get a plug in for somebody else, but he's just very good at it. And he does recommend the best investments, things that cannot be confiscated.
Okay. Anything else, Dan?
That was it.
Okay, fine.
Dan,
can I just say one thing?
Sure.
One thing, if you are concerned about having some protection in case of a crisis, you would want to have some silver. And let me explain to you why. A gold coin today will cost you somewhere, a double eagle, probably in the neighborhood of maybe $400, something like that, $350. Well, you can buy an awful lot for $350, but that is really not very practical. What you really need to do is get some 90% or 45% silver coins, which have intrinsic value because of their silver content, and that's much easier if you're going to buy a loaf of bread. And I hate to sound alarmist, but let's be practical. We are living in serious times, and people better understand that and the implications of Y2K. And I think when we come back after the hour break, we're going to talk a little bit about the millennial bug and the fact that these are perilous times, just as it was on the Titanic. Nobody thought there was a danger. Anything else, Dan?
No, that was about it. I also wanted to thank you for a book you sent me.
Okay, fine.
A month or two ago.
What was that?
I appreciate that, too.
Okay, fine. Were you one of the people who called in and we sent a free book to you?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out there across America on the Internet, why, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Our guest this evening, Ray Payton, and we're just talking about the perilous times we live in. We're sort of talking from a scriptural point of view, from a prophetic point of view, but trying to tie it right down to the world in which we live. And really, we should not be complacent, because what was that wonderful parable that Jesus told about the 10 virgins and the mm-hmm. 5 that were prepared for the bridegroom and 5 that really weren't? And of course,
were the hypocrites.
Right.
The hypocrites were the ones who were not looking for his return.
And of course, when the bridegroom came, they missed the boat, as it were.
Dr. Stan, can I put in a shameless plug here?
You go right ahead.
Dan, if you're listening up there in Minneapolis, we are on the radio up there. And if you'd like, I can give out my web address, and it'll tell you where you can find us in the Minneapolis area.
You go right ahead. You got a radio station up there that carries you?
KKCM, uh-huh. 11 o'clock Saturday morning.
Okay.
And our website is www.real.com. It's real-com.
Mm-hmm.
Real communications.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm great. In fact, you know, the more of people like yourself and the others who are out there getting the message out, I know there's a fellow named Vic Eliason up there in that general area. I was, in fact, did a program with him just this afternoon. He's on 40 stations, and we were able to get that message out on population control in 40 communities across America. And of course, this is what I do. This is what you do. I know you fill in for John Bennett from Citizens for Honest Government. And there are just dozens and dozens of people all across America that are doing this very, very same thing, trying to get people out of their apathy, trying to get them concerned about what's transpiring. Of course, my favorite station is the one we do on Saturdays that you get a chance to listen to down in Los Angeles, Cape Wright. What a wonderful, wonderful listening audience that is.
Well, if Dan will be listening to his local station this Saturday, he's going to hear a real expert. I think his name is Dr. Stanley Monti on my program.
That's the program that I did with you recently
right.
When you were filling in for John Bennett. So, Dan, if you want to listen, then be sure to listen then on Saturday.
He's a good guy.
And incidentally, Dan, as you know, we're on the Internet 3 hours a day. Would be probably your central time, so that would be 6 to 7, and then, of course, our program, which was 10 to 12 back there. I realize that's getting a little late, but appreciate your listening, and I hope people all across America are tuning in, because the Internet may be one of our most effective means of reaching people while we still have time. You know, one of the things that I run into, Ray, is when you talk to people about so much of what's going on, they just look at you and they say, this could be true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get that glassy look, that sort of defensive look, and, you know, as if, well, you must be one of those right-wing anti-government extremists. How do we get people to understand that there really is a problem? We're on the Titanic, we're headed towards the iceberg, and they better start at least getting on their life jacket and maybe even think about not abandoning ship because there's really no place to go, but making preparations and, of course, doing everything they can to try to warn the captain to change the course of the ship.
Well, I'm almost afraid that we have reached the point where so many Americans, and especially Christian Americans, you know, maybe it's familiarity breeds contempt. We've heard this all our lives. It hasn't happened until now, and so we can't believe it is happening now. We're almost like that captain on the Titanic when the mate is saying to him, shouldn't we be getting the women and the children in the boats? And he is glassy-eyed. He can't believe that it's actually happening. He's in shock. I think all we can do is warn people. You know, my ministry is a watchman on the wall ministry. The Bible does say that if we don't warn people, then their blood is going to be on our hands. That's all we can do. And if people hear, they hear. If they don't, they don't. Folks, the facts are there. In fact, I had mentioned earlier that final generation signs list. If you want to write for that, I'll be glad to send it. Plus, I'll send you a free newsletter as well, which will go more in depth on things. But
okay, we're going to be back here in just a minute. Don't even think about changing that dial.
For this or the messages of interviews by Dr. Stan, you can obtain them by contacting Radio Liberty at P.O. Box 13, Santa Cruz, California, 95063.